This is the PocketGamer.biz podcast. I am at Mal. This is the podcast studio where I have game marketers all day long, all of them just for you in these mini episodes. Snackable, enjoyable. And what could be more enjoyable? I've got Piyush Mishra, who is now director of growth at Product Madness. We've had you on the podcast before when you were not. So here you are, a rock star. So what's different at Product Madness? Now you're up a level. Is it also sort of like full funnel, the whole thing, or is it very much still the same responsibilities?
I mean, first of all, thank you for the invitation. It's really a pleasure to, you know, have this conversation with you. We're doing it quite often, so it's really fun.
Yes, we are.
Thing that has changed overall is basically I was looking at, you know, mostly on the ad tech and the strategic side. Now I'm looking at the overall budget. You know, how do we sort of get our media mix sorted? Also sort of working with analytics team, working with DS, working with PMMs, product marketing team and stuff like that. So it's a lot more, you know, strategic role, but also with complete control of the media mix as well. So in that sense, so yeah. It's really fun.
So are you a convert to Media Mix? Are you still the scan man?
No, I still take a deep dive into that. I mean, obviously that's where, you know, I still believe that fundamentally attribution is the main hook. You know, you need to understand your data for you to be able to say that what works and what doesn't, to be honest. So I believe it's very, very important for all the UA managers to fundamentally understand these nuances, including whatever is going to happen with the privacy sandbox. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's good to take a step back, look at the larger picture as well.
Because it is a very important input. That's what I'm hearing. You know, it's very much, no matter what you're doing, that knowledge carries through. It influences what's going to be fed around in the product loop. You know, what did you bring in? How did they behave? How did they engage or stay? I mean, it all fits together. So it all does come back to
it
that.
It does. It does. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, just to give an example, like, for example, if you don't know what are conversion values, how conversion values, missing conversion values is going to affect your data that you're looking at, the 48 hours ROAS or something like that, then eventually it affects how you're trying to plan your media mix, right? So eventually, like, all of these things, you know, sort of take effect, and it really helps you to understand when you're trying to figure out, okay, what channel is working, what channel is not working, what are you looking at, what metrics, because you are sort of limited right now. You're no longer in the world of actually having you know, the beauty of data that we used to have 10 years ago, you know, when I entered the industry. So, you know, it has fundamentally changed. And, you know, I still firmly believe that the more you know about attribution, the more you know about how data fundamentally works, the better you are at, because at the end of the day, these are the only levers you have. You no longer have the, you know, the luxury of looking at the bigger picture. I mean, just for the basics, like understanding the difference between paid and organic on iOS is a big, big task right now, you know. So the fundamentals are changing. You need to evolve. You need to learn more. And I would recommend all you managers to sort of do that as well.
Let's stay with that for just a moment, because I'm sort of like also taking my own informal poll of the metrics that matter. It was ROAS. In fact, I heard you speak. It was one of your podcasts. It was on stage with the UA Society, and we were having, I heard you guys. It was really exciting. You know, what is that metric? And, you know, LTV, ROAS, blended. Where are you at now?
Interesting question. It will take 5 minutes. No, but I'll try to finish it in 2 minutes. I mean, it depends on what level you're measuring things at, right? For example, if you're looking at the overall blended numbers, payback becomes your metric. Like, how quickly can you make your money back? If you're investing $100, how quickly can you make $100 back? Right? That becomes your main metric. The second main metric obviously comes from what exactly is your new user generating. Because in a world of specifically iOS and also on Android to a certain extent, because opt-out is slightly increasing now, you would see a lot of users returning back. But the value from UA essentially is mainly focused on new users. Yes. So what you can generate from new users is what you should also focus on. So these are the two essential targets that we sort of keep internally when we're talking about the overall media mix. But when you level down, when you look at, you know, at a channel level or at a campaign level, then major metrics, I mean, it depends on the space that you're operating in. For us in the social casino space, because we are mostly IAP driven, for us, it's essentially ROAS.
Okay.
ROAS becomes one of the biggest sort of things to look at. Now, if you go a level deeper, which is the creative level, that I'm not really sure. I mean, it becomes debatable when I start speaking about creative level thing, because for me, this is my personal take on this. I know in my team also, my own team doesn't agree with this, which is, you know, creative, I don't think, some exceptions are obviously there when it comes to playables and stuff like that. But in general, a banner or interstitial of 10 seconds or a video of 10 seconds cannot influence you that much that you end up doing a purchase in the product.
Yes.
Right? That is what I fundamentally believe. It's a very good momentary targeting because it's a good combination of having a good audience served with a good creative, with a good landing page, and you eventually converting. But at the end of the day, I don't think that this would help you increase your ROAS, a creative. So my take is that creative should not be measured with ROAS. Mm-hmm. And the more data loss there's going to be in the future, the more you are restricted. And the more I would suggest looking at CTRs and CVRs as the basic metrics. But again, it depends. I wouldn't say that it's very, you know, completely written and set in stone. Like, it's up to them. It's up to the genre as well, the subgenre of the gaming and stuff like that. So, told you 5 minutes.
That is very intriguing because then we're going back to, you know, the non-gaming world of just seeing the brand 20 times makes an impression. Or back in the day, I remember when people were running into banners and interstitials because it was super cheap.
Yeah.
And still saying, hey, still you know, cheap. It's like, it's they're still cheap. It's like billboards in the street. What's wrong with that? I'm passing and I see, you know, the McDonald's is down the road and I see it again and I see it again. Yeah. And then,
But then again, it depends on the objective as well, right? So I mean, for gaming, performance marketing becomes the core. Like, obviously, when it comes to brand, it's a different equation altogether. For gaming, like, people just say, if you're investing this much, give me this much return. I don't care how you're getting it.
Yes.
Just get me that number. So, you know, when in that world, it makes sense that, you know, you focus on that.
And your creative is part of that, but it doesn't, it's not a deal breaker.
So
in terms of the return.
Yeah. Let me sort of, like, one is the metric to focus at. One is the user experience. From a user experience, creative becomes very, very important.
Yes.
There's no question about it. Because I fundamentally believe if you're able to target the right person with the right creative, with the right landing page, you can convert that user. Or you can at least create that top of the mind awareness. Right? Yes. So those, like, you know, marketing things have changed. These factors wouldn't change ever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever marketing
but you're a little bit into, more forgiving when you're saying, did it work? Did it return? Because you're not looking at the creative to necessarily be the point of conversion and therefore the cost.
I am looking at creative. I'm looking at creative as as obviously we are trying to optimize because that's the only lever that you have more or less, right? So we are looking at creative. We are trying to bring in a lot of changes. What I'm trying to say is, like, it should, a ROAS day 7 as a metric, my personal opinion, should not be a criteria of a creative. It is more like CTR and CVR and looking those metrics. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, creatives are very important.
Yes, they're very important. That's the only... You don't have to be, when you're calculating, you don't have to say, oh, it didn't deliver. Yes.
Yeah, it didn't deliver. ROAS D7, remove it. That's something that I have an issue with. Yeah. Like, essentially.
And there are people doing that.
Yeah.
There are people doing
that. I mean, again, it depends on the subgenre. So I don't want to say that they're wrong and I'm right. I'm just saying this is my sort of take on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's switch back to UA at more in the top of the funnel, because UA is like a big Petri dish, right? You can test a lot of really cool stuff with UA. And one thing you can do, and what people are doing more, is prototyping to validate a concept and then test the market fit. And that's what it's about. You know, it used to be soft launch, but we don't. Yeah, that's a costly and long, long process. So UA is much cooler, probably much cheaper, much quicker. What about the results? How can it be used to validate the concept?
I mean, look, it depends on the objective that you're starting out with, essentially. Mm-hmm. Because what happens fundamentally, how we sort of take it up is, we get the product team and the marketing team in a room. We have a conversation. Okay, you say, what are your objectives? Like, if it's a very soft launch, if you just want to measure D1 retention, let's make that an objective. Let's reach out to as many users as you can and see exactly how the D1 retention is.
Right.
After a certain stage, the metric would change. Mm-hmm. It will become about D7, then it will become about monetization at some stage, you know. So it's a stage, right? You start from a very basic, you know, testing on App Store, trying to A-B test multiple variations of the game, very version of the game, see how D1 retention is, D2 retention, because initially retention is not a metric.
Yeah.
Over a period of time, it becomes about monetization, then it becomes about launching in the country that you actually feel the product can work, and, you know, eventually holding up to a global launch. So these are the sort of, you know, the journey typically that you take. So it depends on what criteria you set at the start of the objective of that particular phase.
Okay.
Because there are phases when you're trying to roll
the ball. What are you prototyping?
Exactly. What are you prototyping? Like, for example, if I'm trying to prototype another social, casino game in the slot space, then I'm trying to figure out, okay, let's start very, very basic. Let's start maybe with a smaller country that could potentially give you, for example, Canada could be a replica of US.
Yeah.
Right, in terms of user behavior, like when we are looking at the metric, very small number, very small.
Yeah.
So you can take that risk in that market. So you decide the market, you go there with like 2-3 versions of the game. You see, okay, let's say in the very start, D1 retention, let's be very clear. I want to measure D1 retention.
Yes.
Run it on Facebook, run it on Google, run it on Unity, whichever partners that you are comfortable with. See how these metrics are doing, because you're not going to get organic conversion at that stage.
Right.
So one also very important and fundamentally basic thing that I feel people miss in this equation is they don't factor in the organic behavior that would eventually help you develop the game in the future. Mm. Right. So what they do is initially when I'm looking at the data, I'm looking purely from a paid standpoint, and paid numbers would never stand out.
Right.
You cannot compare a paid number to an app that exists in the market, which is having a decent organic base.
True.
You need to have, because you're obviously reading the competition space, you're trying to understand in this space, what is the D1 criteria? What is the D7 criteria? What is the ROAS criteria? In general, what people are sort of, you know, how much money they're willing to spend on these games. So you obviously you do all of those, proper competitive analysis, and then only you enter the space. But within that, it's also very important to understand that right now you're trying to compare what is a paid world with a very high level organic plus paid world, where organic sort of always behaves better than paid, typically in this space.
They're engaged. They want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, they are organics.
They want to play.
Yeah.
What about keeping UA costs of this type of strategy down in the early phase? And this was an interesting point that another one of your colleagues made, because what you want to do is you want to look at the channels, the countries where you validate the game. But at the same time, how do you keep the UA costs down? Because you want to run this experiment, right? You want to prove this strategy in the early phase, but you want to also do it, at a moderate cost.
Obviously, I mean, look, cost becomes very important because you don't want to spend $20 million to figure out if the game is not going to work.
Right? Exactly.
So you obviously limit the cost. But before the cost comes a factor of how many users the product team is comfortable with to see that, okay, if I have a base of 5,000 users, I'm okay with a D1 retention of 30%. Let's do it. These are criteria.
Yeah.
What the marketing and the product are agreeing on, right? Then comes the question of which market to go for. That's where the most of the calculation in terms of cost actually begins. Because if you're trying to, let's say, you're just trying to run an app to see, it's a tech test. We call it a technical test, which is basically just get 5,000, 10,000 users, see exactly if the tech is holding up.
Yeah.
In that case, you can launch it in any country. It doesn't matter, any cheaper country, like in APAC, you'll find
just
a lot.
Don't
of,
crash yeah, server.
Just I just want to see if the server's going to get crashed at 50,000 installs or not. So if you're starting with that, then the objective of that is like, you know, very clear. Then you can go to Philippines, Malaysia, India, and, you know, these areas because you have cheaper CPMs there.
Yes.
You'll get more installs. Obviously, the user is not going to play these kind of games over there. But, you know, you see, okay, people opening up the app, it's fine. You know,
you've got a little bit of a proof.
A little bit of it, yeah.
And the server didn't crash.
Yeah. But again, like in some cases, I've also been part of those conversations where people are sort of, trying to expedite the whole process of launching the game.
Yes.
Now, in that case, you need to really test the actual market, right?
Okay.
Now, what you can try to do is, for example, let's say in US, I have to do a global launch in the next 6 to 8 months, and I'm doing a soft launch right now, and I'm trying to figure out if our metrics are sticking in the actual demographic of these users, right? So what we can do in that case is limit it by controlling the states within, let's say, US,
okay,
right? So if you have five states that, you know, you will take out the list of top 10 states in general, and you'll say, okay, top five are these. We don't want to touch that because these are our future markets where we want to actually go berserk. We don't want to give a negative perception at the start. So maybe let's not do that. Maybe convert something that is giving you some reflection of the overall market.
Mm-hmm.
So that's you can do something called a market matching,
okay,
right? And you can say, okay, these are the sort of markets or states, or, you know, maybe you can always find markets. For example, when we try to do something in Australia, we find something similar market matching in terms of New Zealand. So we'll try and launch it in New Zealand, see exactly how the user is behaving. It could potentially, obviously, Australia for us is a better market than New Zealand, but it gives you certain insight of saying, okay, how exactly it is holding up. So all of these things you try and figure out, because, for example, Canada has relatively lower CPM than US. New Zealand has lower CPM than Australia. So like all of these things you try to factor in to figure out, okay, what do we need to do? But at the same time, one thing I'll call out is, you don't want, like, you have to be very much in sync with what product is saying. You don't want to end up in a world where product has a different objective than you. Because if they're saying they want to do a tech test and you launch in the US, you're wasting a lot of money. Similarly, if you say that I want to do a global launch and you launch it in Philippines, it's not going to help you because these kind of games are not going to work in Philippines, right? So like you have to be in sync with the product.
And that's also really smart because one, you're in sync with the product, but as you said yourself, you're saying we're going to spend to do this, but we're going to limit. We're going to limit the number of states in the US, or we're going to look for very, very similar markets because it would be a waste to go to something completely different and then try and bring that back. You just don't have that apples to apples comparison. Exactly. Here's a good one for you. I wanted to skip to creative. We just talked about measuring the value of the creative, but let's talk about what works and what will ultimately work as a full game. Because you're looking at creatives and sometimes you're sort of like testing to say, I've talked to others who use that even to come back and influence, like in a casual game, you know, some of the gameplay, some of the narrative. I mean, it's not just about the creative. So how do you validate that? How do you understand what will work as a full game?
It has to do, let's separate first of all right now, UA versus retargeting, right? So if you're talking about UA in general, you obviously, it's a matter of sequencing. From a user, think of from a user standpoint. If I'm a user, right, and I'm looking at these ads, okay, 2-3 ads on the game of you know, Heart of Vegas, you see that, fine, okay, move on. Now I, in my mind, it's registered there's a game called Heart of Vegas. Obviously, you have that message for long enough, I'll eventually maybe install and eventually maybe play the game.
Right.
But within that sequence, you don't want to run a creative that is talking about level 50 that I know as a user I'm never going to reach.
Oh yeah.
Right?
You have to keep it very basic.
You have to keep it very basic because, again, that's why it's a combination of audience plus creative. It's never one, right? You can create multiple, you can create, like, for example, if I'm trying to target a lookalike, I should have a different set of creators because I know these are social casino players and they can potentially convert, right? So I would have a different creative strategy for that as compared to running a very generalized broad-based campaign where I just, my objective is to increase the top of the mind awareness with higher frequency for the users to eventually convert. So it depends on the objective. It depends on what you're trying to achieve with that, which is why like creative is very important, but creative has to be coupled with audience and landing page. It cannot do anything on its own.
So this all comes together. You can use UA to test concept, to validate concept. You can use the creative, of course, being careful that you're speaking to the audience that you really want to be speaking to, because you're testing, does the creative fly for the game concept? What about greenlighting this? What do you look at when you want to greenlight a game's development? What kind of benchmarks? This is early phase, right? We're going to stay in early phase because this is what's happening. A lot of people, particularly in the pocket gamer audience, they're like, yes, I want to launch another game or I want to launch my first game. So I'm thinking about them, early phase, making that decision. The green light, what works for you as benchmarks to look at?
The basic that you start with is obviously the benchmark of the entire genre itself. So, I mean, you look out at Sensitar, you look out at data.ai, you try and figure out the data that is available in the market to see, okay, maybe in social casino space in US, your benchmark for D1 retention is 30%. For D7, it's like 10%, 7%, something like that, whatever that number is, right? You start there, but you don't just base the entire narrative on the basis of that. Like, if I don't hit it, let's not continue. No. At the same time, you have to keep on evolving the product. The trick is to understand, are you actually improving your retention with more product development that you are doing? Because obviously it's a stage-wise approach, right? You don't just go in and create the product and then just give it to marketing to launch. No. At every single stage, the marketing is with you, right?
Right.
And the marketing is trying to see from creative analysis, from whatever users you're targeting, say, if you're running these kind of creative, if you're running a creative that is saying, that is talking about a very specific IP that is famous across the board, great, that's working very well. If you're talking about a very generic IP that is not famous across the board, it's not going to work. So, you know, all of these things need to feed back into the product and say, okay, then these kind of IPs need to register at the start of the game because the users would automatically be more inclined and become more trustworthy because of this. Similarly, your landing page, your ASO page needs to become very, very clear about these things that, okay, what are the IPs that are working? Show them at the start.
Yes.
Show the events that are happening. Has to be coordinated. Has to be, again, all three things combined at one place. So you sort of, obviously the higher level benchmark becomes the competition. And obviously if you're operating in the same space, you know the variation, you know what you're comfortable with, you know what ROAS you're comfortable with at certain stage when you're trying to move towards global launch. One of the basic things that I see sometimes there's a difference is obviously what numbers product looks at versus what numbers marketing looks at.
True.
You know, because those two are looking at sort of different
One's a little bit more midterm, one's a little bit more short-term, one's a little bit more patient.
Yes. Exactly. So you have to be more patient throughout the process. And same, I feel the product team also would feel the same thing about marketing, that, you know, you need to be more patient with us because we're trying to work on the product side. Yeah. But yeah, overall, it's a mix of, you know, what the competition is doing in the market. So it should also not be the case that, you know, your games are doing 20% retention. You're okay with that. But right now, the market has moved on, is doing 30% retention. Yeah. Then you cannot launch the game with that criteria, right? Even though your games are successful for the last 5 years, but you have to move on and see how the market is reacting in then and now, right? And see exactly what are the benchmarks. So that becomes very basic criteria, but that's not the only criteria. If that is fulfilled and you have multiple others, you see how the retention is. You see, you know, sometimes you feel D1 retention is very good, D7 is bad. Sometimes you feel, okay, the user's retention is very good, but they're not monetizing. Yeah. So there are different stages within that that you feel, okay, what can be improved, what can be done, and you try and keep on making sure that the game development is going on, and eventually, you know, it goes greenlit and, you know, launched again.
So key focus, not the only one though, is the benchmarks, the app store, app marketplace intelligence reports, and the rest of them. But there are a number of them. I mean, I've even been here at Mount, a couple come and say, yeah, we do app data, because of course everyone does, right? It's a different space. We've got consolidation. There's a little bit of space for a couple niche players. Is there an interesting one we wouldn't have, not in the usual suspects of benchmarks or sources of information, that you would recommend to look at, to examine, to put into the mix when you're factoring, again, that big decision, green lighting, going ahead with producing a game?
One important thing that I was referring to before as well is modeling with the help of DS and DA, right? Data science and data analytics. Modeling how the current version of paid would look like 1 year down the line when you have some organic base.
Okay.
That becomes very important criteria, because if you are pushing a lot of the paid side and your organic is not growing up, and you know, you see that in the, again, I said very high level, obviously, that you look at, you know, the competition space, but you also look at organic, paid, ranking,
and it's gonna give it that
keywords,
boost.
You know, all of these things, right?
That obviously, model is important because it's
exactly
gonna give it that boost.
The customer feedback on the app, the rating, you know, all of these factors are very much responsible for building your organic, right? So you have to keep in mind that, okay, and it's at a very high level, I'm giving you an example, but, you know, if you have a rating of 4, you have an app store ranking of within top 10 in that criteria, if you have all the landing page very much sorted out, talking about the major IPs, then your organic would maybe reach 20% of total installs and something like that. Now, in that world, how would your overall ROAS, overall retention would look like? Because organic automatically would give you that boost. So modeling that is also very important. You cannot just completely base it on the basis of what paid is giving you. That becomes very, very important. That's something that I would encourage everybody to look at.
So we're talking about greenlighting the game, and we've got all systems go. Now, I want to just take a step back, because what goes into the game when you're greenlighting it, we know you had to think about monetization. You have to think about a lot of things. You're going to do community building. What's all that going to be? Building that all in. What about building UA in from the beginning in that, and saying, okay, does it need to be baked in from the start? And does it follow straight through to post-launch? Because it's going to change. Are there benefits to sort of pinning that down early? Or is there more of a benefit to evolving it?
So one thing that would fundamentally not change is the effect of marketing, you know, in the gaming space. What I mean by that is performance marketing essentially runs gaming space. If you do not do paid, there are less chances of you. And when I say paid, I mean, I'm including brand as well, because a lot of games have success with just doing brand. But overall marketing, if you don't do marketing, games would not survive, especially in a space where there are more privacy focused. You know, you cannot really do a lot if you're a very small developer trying to break out in this space. I'm not saying it cannot happen. I'm just saying it becomes very difficult to do it. It's really tough to do it. So which is why marketing needs to be baked in right from the inception when it comes to the product journey. Because at every single step, either through ASO, either through Play Store optimization, either through looking at how the creatives are being responded to, either by looking at how what kind of audience are actually, you know, we can do breakdown on audience as well. You can say, okay, these are the audience that actually installed your game. Within that, men of 25 plus is playing like this. Women 25 plus playing like this. Like, we can do all of those demographic criteria that gives you insight into understanding, okay, maybe we started developing the game for everybody, but no, we need to develop a game maybe for women 30 plus, because they are the ones who are actually giving you high retention. Mm-hmm. Right? So these kind of feedback would only come from marketing.
Yes.
These kind of things would only come from marketing. So because paid is the one that is driving the initial boost of all of these users, right? So that's why marketing needs to be baked in right from the start. You mm-hmm. cannot function and launch a product without the marketing team's input.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, you don't want it overcrowded because you want to run it like a startup. So you don't want like five different people of the marketing team sitting in the product, but at least one or two people in there attending most of the strategic meetings and giving their input and saying, okay, no, this is how the market is reacting like, because product can do things on their own that yeah. they feel is right within that space. And they are right to look at it. But it's marketing that gives you that lens to see how the users are responding. Mm-hmm. And that feedback is very important. And that would never change.
So, what about the flexibility in the UA? You do have to bake that in. Marketing has to be there. But you also want to be able to say, I've been talking to people, oh, we're looking for new channels. We're trying to find new channels. You know, Threads looks interesting. Let's do something there. I mean, you have to have that flexibility. So where do you balance between saying, this is the way we're going to do UA, but nah, we're going to do something different.
Look, I mean, it's a bit tricky in that sense because you don't want to run the risk of exploring new channels right at the start. Mm-hmm. The reason being that, you know, or you can be too innovative, or you can just go creatively and say, okay, no, I'm just going to do my influencer marketing to start with. I'm just going to get some influencers to ask them to download the app to start with, see how the users are responding. I know these influencers are doing these kind of gaming genres. Let's ask them to do it. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's also one approach. There's nothing wrong in that. But initially, when you're starting out, you don't want to risk running with a lot of partners and trying to figure out which one would work better, because that's not the objective. It's just about getting a certain number of users to see how exactly they are responding to the product
itself. Do you even have the commercial viability, yes,
right?
Exactly.
So that's the part that you need to understand. But over a period of time, like when you are sort of closer to a global launch, that's when you strategize, because by then your demographic is clear. You know what kind of audience you want to target. You know what kind of audience you build the game for. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, all of these things. And at that point, your marketing will be decided on the basis of the demographics that you are sure of, you know, and then you sort of start innovating and, you know, trying to figure out different channels at that stage.
So, Piyush, what you've been sharing is really important for all of the genres. But is there a genre in gaming where this works maybe better or maybe it doesn't work as well? You know, this sounds like it might be really, really good for hybrid casual, holding for all of the subgenres of gaming.
I mean, what I'm saying, I'll be very honest, it comes from my experience of understanding this. And a lot of this is based mostly on social casino, and it would also apply to hybrid casual. Mm-hmm. What it might not apply to is the action-based genre and RPG and, you know, mid-core genre and stuff like that. But I still believe the fundamentals wouldn't change. So the fundamentals that I'm saying would also remain the same. It's the way you quote it, it's the way you sort of, you know, present it could potentially change. But every single game would behave a similar way when they're starting out, because they're all relying on paid activity to boost them, to see some sort of input, to understand what the demographic you're trying to hit.
Right.
And the product would evolve with that. I don't ever know of a product that started with just one clear objective and it ended up with that kind of demographic. That okay. At the start, you say, I want to hit this kind of user, these kind
That's
of users.
True.
And, you know, at the end, you actually end up doing that. It's rare. I'm not saying it won't happen. It's rare to find that. So which is why, you know, it is applicable across the board. But obviously, the way to present this would change for a specific genre. What I'm saying is coming from my own experience in the social casino space.
Well, these are lessons for our audience, no matter, because there's so much in there, so much to unpack. And you took so much time to explain it. Thanks so much, Piyush. It was great to have you. And I'm sure it won't be the last time.
No, for sure.
Thanks again.
Thanks, Peggy. Always. Yeah. Always fun to chat with you.
This show is all about how to do your job better, how to make an amazing game, how to market it. And you have a say. So if you have a story or know someone we need to shine a light on, then we would love to hear from you.
We want to hear from you. We want to reflect the reality of the mobile games market in all its wonderful complexity and strangeness. So if you have any suggestions for us, if you have any feedback for us, you can always get in touch. You can email us at podcast@pocketgamer.biz. You can find us on Twitter @PGBiz. And you can reach out to us through the pocketgamer.biz website. If you're interested in listening to all of our podcasts, you can find them at pocketgamer.biz /podcast. And we would love to hear your thoughts on future shows.
And we've got you covered on all the major platforms. So subscribe to the audio podcast, as Brian said. Look for us on YouTube. If you want to read it, hey, you can do that too, because we have a companion post for you as well on the pocketgamer.biz website.
Tune in again for the next edition of the pocketgamer.biz podcast. And we look forward to speaking to you in the near future. Until then, I'm Brian Baglow.
I'm Peggy Ann Saltz, and that's a wrap until next week.